Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Not the Houston Texans, because the Texans and starting right guard Zach Fulton have agreed to a reworked contract per Field Yates. Fulton was due $14 million over the next 2 years with no guarantees, but now he'll be guaranteed $5 million this season and then $3 million next season. That $3 million will be not guaranteed. So the Texans will be running it back with their starting offensive line, and they will not, John Lopez, I repeat, will not be adding three-time Pro Bowl guard Larry Warford.
I'm good with it. I think I'm good. It's good from every way that you look at it. Zach Fulton now has guaranteed money, and the Texans have a better salary cap situation. They have that continuity that every team in the league is always looking for. I mentioned earlier, first time since 2010, 2011, that the Texans will start the exact same offensive line in consecutive years. So it's good all over. Unless you were just like an absolute Larry Warford will be the difference to the, you know, to the Super Bowl in that camp, and I don't think anybody really was.
By the way, we also have the details of Carlos Hyde's contract in Seattle. Could I interest you in those details?
Oh, you know you can.
All right, here are the details on that contract. The base value of the contract, $2.75 million. $750,000 is the signing bonus. $1.5 million is the base salary, and then a $500,000 per game roster bonus. There are also incentives worth up to $1.25 million. So the max value is $4 million, but he's only
all stat guys
getting a base value of $2.75 million,
God,
which
is
about
$7.25
million less than what David Johnson will be making. Bill O'Brien offered him 2 years, 10.
You know, we're not all stat guys.
Well, good thing.
Here's the details there. I don't know what to really make of that.
It's a make good contract. It's on the cheap.
It's a good deal. It's a good deal. But the good news is the Texans will be running it back with their offensive line. There's high hopes for that offensive line. They will not be adding a three-time Pro Bowler, and we know that they lost a four-time Pro Bowler during the offseason. Unless you've been living under a rock, DeAndre Hopkins no longer with us. He's not dead, but he is no longer with us here in Houston. He's a member of the Arizona Cardinals, and he did the some national media yesterday on ESPN, Jalen and Jacoby, and I got to give them credit. They asked him the tough questions. Now, did DeAndre Hopkins really answer the questions? I'll let you decide. He was first asked about the notion that Bill O'Brien traded him because he had 3 years remaining on his contract. You and I have kind of rolled our eyes at that because we've seen Julio Jones in Atlanta get the job done, the Falcons get the job done, and, you know, moving some money up and then giving him a deal when he had time left. DeAndre Hopkins yesterday on ESPN asked about that very thing. Here was DeAndre's answer to that question.
Well, I haven't spoken on that too much. Obviously that's my agent, and them, but I just wanted, to be compensated for what I was worth. Obviously, I was making little or nothing, compared to where my play was. They felt like they made the right moves, and I wish Deshaun the best. He's one of my best friends, I wish him the best.
So he's not going to answer that one.
No, probably shouldn't have said little or nothing compared to his peers or where he was in his game, because he was making a very, very handsome salary. But his point is very clear that this was, you know, this was something that he did, you know, ask for, and I think by most accounts deserved. And I still go back to the point of the Texans are now paying more money than they would have paid DeAndre Hopkins bringing in these other guys. Now, I know it's more than one person, it's two, but still, you don't have DeAndre Hopkins.
Here was Nuke Hopkins straight up asked what happened between he and King Bill. This is the question that a lot of people want to know. This is the billion-dollar question, if you will. Yesterday on ESPN, DeAndre Hopkins asked just that.
What happened between you and Bill O'Brien?
You know, man, it's, you know, he's a competitive guy. I'm a competitive guy. We both want to win football games. You know, so that's all. I'm not going to speak on that too much. I feel like I did all I could do, you know, but unfortunately, you know, I'm not there. You know, but I'm on a great team, a great organization. I had a great time with the Texans, had a lot of great players that, you know, I played with that I'm still friends with to this day, and will continue to be after football. So my time in Houston was great.
You can kind of hear that little sense of frustration in his voice, right? That he's still not altogether. Like, he wants to tell you exactly what was going on in those meetings and those conversations with Bill O'Brien, but he's just going to take the high road, so to speak. But you can kind of hear it. You know, he's a competitive guy. I'm a competitive guy. You just kind of sense that he's like, hey, I went in there and I said, you know, what are we going to do? And Bill O'Brien, again, I feel, opinion, made it personal, and then they butted heads and he's gone.
Well, what about the impact this has on the most important man in the building? We know who the most powerful guy is in that building. That's Bill O'Brien. Make no mistake about it. That is the most powerful football guy in the entire town. But what about the most important guy? And we all know that is number four. That is Deshaun Watson heading into his fourth season. DeAndre Hopkins, he and Deshaun are obviously very good friends. He was straight up asked, what impact will your departure have on the most important man in H-Town when it comes to football?
Man, Deshaun's a warrior. Deshaun's a competitor. As long as he has a football in his hand, that's all he cares about. Man, Deshaun's an elite quarterback. One of the best quarterback I've had a chance to play with so far. And he's able to make players better. And I'm pretty sure that's what he's going to do. He's going to rally his team up to help them win. I wish him nothing but the best. I'm in the NFC, so I hope I see him in a Super Bowl. But his best target, a guy that he can depend on not being there for him, I'm pretty sure that would impact any quarterback's game.
Man.
Well, Deshaun Watson actually quote tweeted that very answer, and he said, my brother. So, I mean, he obviously agrees with DeAndre Hopkins when it comes to that. So, It's not like that's some sort of shot at his best friend.
Deshaun Watson
agrees, and he would be foolish not to say that that impacts him not having DeAndre Hopkins on the field.
I'm not criticizing anyone here. It's just like that's pretty straightforward, man.
I think you have to be
delicate.
You know,
I'm not there anymore.
I think you got to be delicate with messages when you are a leader, when you are Bill O'Brien, and you are, you know, the coaching staff, whether it's Tim Kelly or whatever. I get that they're excited about these new guys, and I get that they're excited about the possibility of the Texans having a complete receiving core that doesn't just rely on DeAndre Hopkins, where you can spread the rock out to the other guys. I understand that, but I think the way you present that message to Deshaun Watson is very sensitive for many reasons. Number one, it's one of his best friends.
Yeah.
Number two, it's been his most productive receiver by far since he's been in the league. And number three, you don't want to make it seem like, and you don't want to present it to Deshaun Watson, that something's just been wrong with him because he's relied on DeAndre Hopkins.
And there's a sense of that.
And there is a sense of that, but the bottom line is, John, whether it's regardless of what happens with these three receivers, obviously they're going to all make plays at different times, but there's going to have to be a guy that emerges as the go-to guy in the clutch. Like, there's going to have to be a guy that, when the defense appears to have a great game plan, when things are going perfect, you can simplify it and say you just got to throw it to the open guy. Sometimes it's just not that simple.
Right.
But when the defense is not giving you what you want, there has to be somebody that Deshaun Watson trusts. Maybe not as much as he trusted Nuke, but there has to be that guy. So the message and how it's presented to him, you can't just basically say DeAndre Hopkins was holding you back. This offense is going to be better without DeAndre Hopkins. It has to be presented very well by Bill O'Brien, and there's cause for concern when it comes to the manner and the effectiveness in which Bill O'Brien is able to relate to and handle egos, guys with egos and guys with pride. So I think it's very important that the message that they present has to be presented the right way for Deshaun.
You're right on this, because I don't think any quarterback in of any level of football, from Pee Wee to the NFL, has ever not had a favorite receiver in a given season, right? They all have that guy that they trust and they have confidence in, that they'll go to, that they look to when a play breaks down, or maybe, you know, in a big moment. You're absolutely, somebody's going to lead the league. Somebody's going to lead this team in receiving. Somebody's going to lead this team in touchdowns receiving. And so he's got to, that's part of the getting ready for the season part, and also getting to know his guys.
How do you improve everything that you need to improve as a general manager / head coach? What would you say if I asked John Lopez, a guy who's covered Bill O'Brien since day one? We've both followed Bill O'Brien since day one. If I asked John Lopez just off the dome, freestyle, what Bill O'Brien's weaknesses are, not just as a coach, but as a general manager, what would you say they are?
I think his weakness as a general manager, two big things stand out.
Okay.
I think he gets emotional.
Emotions.
And the second thing, I think he does not understand true value of players.
Okay.
Whether it's contractual value or draft value.
Okay. So with that said, I think there are some other flaws that I would say Bill O'Brien has. I would say that a lot of times he doesn't have a feel of the game. I would say a lot of times the offensive game
plan. Yeah, but
you said
as general manager.
I know, but I'm adding to what you're saying, because I want to bring it back. Because I think from a coach perspective, sometimes I don't feel like he has a feel for the game. I agree with Clint Sterner and Dan Orlovsky when it comes to the lack of creativity on offense. And I also feel like this offense hasn't been maxed out. Right. Now, to solve the problems I just mentioned, you can hire a new offensive coordinator. You can watch tape, and you can
trust Deshaun.
Yeah, you can trust Deshaun, and you can dedicate some resources to the offensive side of the ball to maybe maximize that. How do you work on what you just said? If you're too emotional and you don't understand value, is it just as simple as learning on the go, learning from past mistakes? I'm being serious. How do you work on your emotions? Because we know that it's important not to be too emotional, not to have too quick of a trigger. How does a guy that clearly, that according to you and according to many, needs to work on emotion and value in guys? How do you work on that? How do you work on that?
That's not a quick fix, and that's a problem, because he's, by most accounts, has like 1 or 2 years to get this thing right. Because what you're doing is you're talking about changing a tangible thing versus changing an intangible thing. The tangible things you can fix. You can go out and get a new offensive coordinator. Yeah, you can go get assets that you, even if you overpay for, you have them in your locker room. I mean, Laremy Tunsil's a great example. You know, all these guys. You can fix tangible things. The intangible things are his makeup, his individual makeup as a general manager. What was he, 49, 51 years old, whatever he is, you expect him to change his personality and not be as emotional in these things? I think over time he could probably fix the value part.
Right.
You know, overvaluing, that's experience, right? That's experience, right. But it's not going to happen tomorrow.
And the other thing is, and I think, you know, I obviously, I support growth. Like, I think growth is important in any profession. Like,
right.
You know, and, you know, I'm sure when you started out writing, you grew as a writer.
It was ugly.
Obviously, when you're in media, you have guys that will talk to you and try to help you out, and you'll try to grow. But a lot of times you need to talk to those people, and you need to have those difficult conversations. You need to put them to practice. My question would be, who is he talking to about the emotions, about the value, and all that type of stuff? Like, is there anybody that's going to sit him in a room like they would a John Lopez or a Landry Locker and say, dude, like, you've got to present this.
How much does
better.
He trust Jack Easterby?
How much should he trust Jack Easterby?
No, in terms of like as a mental coach.
Well, how much is Jack Easterby willing?
As a sounding board.
How much is Jack Easterby willing to be the guy that has the tough conversations? Because there's a lot of bosses that won't have tough conversations with guys who need it.
Mm-hmm.
How much does Bill O'Brien have a guy he can go to that to help him figure these things out? Because emotional, like being too emotional, I mean, that's a problem, man.
Yeah.
Like, if you think that's a problem, that's
a big problem.
That's where you make bad trades. That's where you make decisions. That's where you don't relate to people. That's where, a locker room. You can lose a locker room. You can lose support. Like that's a problem. That's something. But it's not something that can't be fixed. You know what I mean? Like it can be fixed.
But you know what? It's kind of like losing weight. You know, you have to want to. You can talk about, I need to lose 20 pounds, I need to lose 20 pounds, but until you really want to, you ain't going to lose that weight. You can talk about, I will be less emotional, I'm going to be more pragmatic, I'm going to be more deliberate in my decisions, but until you want to, you're not going to. So he has to have someone that he's going to be able to trust. I'm guessing Jack Easterby might be the only one, but he can also lord over Jack Easterby. We talked about this week, where are we sure that this relationship isn't going to end like his last two relationships with Rick Smith and Brian Gain? Everybody seems to think that this is going to be, you know, they're holding hands and they're walking in a meadow and they're skipping, you know, that's all happy.
How do you walk in a meadow?
They're skipping in a meadow together, hand in hand, you know, smelling daisies. Is that going to happen? Are we so sure about that? It may not be, especially if that conversation is had.
It's the OG John Lopez, Landry Locker, Figgy Fig with you on a Football Friday. Speaking of Bill O'Brien, I went back in time and I pulled a Bill O'Brien interview after a bad loss at Penn State.
Oh, no. The lab was at work again.
It was at work. It was about 7 years ago. And I decided I was going to put the reaction to a ugly loss at Penn State side to side with the reaction to the loss against the Denver Broncos last year. How much has Bill O'Brien changed from his time at Penn State to now? We'll lay it out for you. And since it is Friday, it's Freestyle Friday, Oklahoma edition. The best freestyle and the worst freestyle, Atlanta versus Georgia next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
All right, I decided to go in the lab and just hear what Bill O'Brien sounded like after a heartbreaking loss, an unforgivable loss to many. 7 years ago when he was at Penn State in his second year, compared to now with the Houston Texans. Penn State lost 44-24 to Indiana in Bill O'Brien's second year. Indiana ended up winning 5 games that year.
Oh, no.
This was the most points Indiana scored that year.
Was Osweiler his quarterback?
And it was a bad, 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 bad game for the Penn State Nittany Lions. They were heading into a game against Michigan, and Bill O'Brien sat down for his coach's interview. Now, we all remember last year, the You Suck Too Mother Effer game between the Texans and the Broncos, where the Texans were down damn near 5 touchdowns at half. The offense was in horse bleep, so on so forth. Just an unforgivable loss coming off the loss to the New England Patriots. In this lab exercise on a Football Friday here on In the Loop Sports Radio 610, I decided to just go back in time and take what Bill O'Brien said after the 20-point loss to 5-win Indiana compared to what he had to say after the horrific loss to the Denver Broncos.
It couldn't have been that similar.
Well, I mean, it was 7 years, so maybe maybe it's changed.
He was
a little bit.
He could have been like he is now.
Well, we'll see. Here we go. Let's go back in time. The then to the now. Bill O'Brien after losing by 20 to Indiana, with a little bit of Bill O'Brien after the loss to the Denver Broncos last year sprinkled in.
Joined by head coach Bill O'Brien leading up to the Michigan game. Coach, a couple of takeaways from the Indiana game. What types of things were you looking at in terms of how the team bounced back yesterday at practice?
Well, we did. We watched the tape and corrected the mistakes. You know, in the game we did a lot of good things too. And so we know we have a great opponent coming in here, and you know, we're going to have a great week of practice.
Why is it so important for how the team comes back on Monday? And what is it about the character of these kids that seems to every time, no matter what type of adversity, they come back ready to go to work?
Yeah, this is a resilient bunch of guys. That's the type of kids that that Penn State attracts. You know, we get a bunch of kids here that are tough, that are mentally tough. And look, it's one loss. You know, at the end of the day, you know, it's very, very difficult to go undefeated.
When you look at Michigan's defense on film, what stands out? Obviously, numbers-wise, great rushing defense, but what stands out from their group?
You know, they're tough. They do a really good job against the run. I believe it's a good matchup for us, and hopefully we have a good game plan and go out there and execute it.
A little troubling. It sounds like
just lost by 20 to Indiana.
They lost by 28.
They did, and the crazy
they did some
thing
good
is
things
they
in
ended
the game.
Up
and that reminded
Michigan.
Me of something.
They ended up beating Michigan too.
They did. That's right.
They ended up beating Michigan.
But that one part where he goes, you know, we did some good things too. It wasn't all bad. It reminded me of a game where he said something similar, but I can't put my finger on it.
I'm trying to think about it because there was an ugly loss to the Denver Broncos. Bill O'Brien said they did some good things. He talked about
it,
horse bleep.
It was that game, huh?
He threw the horse bleep. We had to use the dump button when he did that. And there was also in there, if you caught it, Bill O'Brien talking about it's hard to go undefeated. What does that remind you of?
Do you guys have any idea?
It is hard to win in the NFL.
How hard it is to win in the NFL.
It is hard to win in the NFL. So we just heard the Penn State. Here's what that reminded me of.
I think you guys are unbelievable to me, though. Like, how do you have any idea how hard it is to win an NFL football game? I mean, it is the most difficult thing to do, I think, in professional sports, to go out and win an NFL football game. These wins, no matter how you win, I mean, really, like, I get these questions here, and I'm going, like, what does that mean? We didn't play well, and we still won. Okay, whatever you decide is playing well is fine with me, but we won, and we've won four in a row, and now the key is, can we keep it going?
It's hard to go undefeated.
Dude, he hasn't changed.
It's really hard to go undefeated.
He hasn't changed.
It's hard to win in the league.
You put those things, you could invert those two pieces of audio there of him. You could have put what he said after the Denver game back when they lost to Penn State, and you could take the Penn State audio and put it after the Denver game, and you wouldn't know the difference.
Here's the start of the Penn State, and then we'll hear the Denver thing. This is the start of the Penn State. Keep in mind, they lost 44-24 to Indiana, who won five games that year.
Joined by head coach Bill O'Brien leading up to the Michigan game. Coach, a couple of takeaways from the Indiana game. What types of things were you looking at in terms of how the team bounced back yesterday at practice?
Well, we did. We watched the tape and corrected the mistakes. You know, in the game, we did a lot of good things, too.
Right. We did a lot of good things, and we watched the tape. Here is Bill O'Brien after the Denver Broncos game, the you suck too mother effort game.
We ran the ball for over 100 yards. I mean, it was a horrible game, but, like, the offensive line, you know, again, we had some issues with penalties, like has been pointed out 50 times between the last two press conferences, rightfully so.
There were also some situations where we saw Bradley Roby and Jonathan Joseph on the sideline.
I mean, there were some things on offense that were pretty good. I'm not sure if you guys watched the film, but look, I know it was a terrible game, but just throw that out there. It wasn't horseshit on offense.
There we go. Just throw that out there. Just, you know.
Is it normal for coaches to have like huge letdowns and then respond? Because the Texans do respond when they hit rock bottom. It's kind of weird, but it also, if you look at it, it happened at Penn State with the loss to Indiana. You beat Michigan, who was a 7-win team that year, but Michigan's better than Indiana. You end up winning that game, and then you have the Denver game that is just the ugliest game we've seen in a long time, and they respond and win the next week. Is there something to be said for that, or is it just a situation where you set the bar so low 1 week and then you bounce back and you finally play up to your potential? Like the C word's always thrown out with Bill O'Brien. It was thrown out last year. Consistency. Is that just one of his things? Why does it happen? Is it something that happens all the time? Because all we care about is what happens here, and it just seems extreme when you have losses like that and then you go to that.
Let me ask you a question, and it's going to be part of my answer. I'm going to revert to college football, okay? How many times has a 3-win, let's say, Oklahoma, I know this is a fantasy world, played their asses off against a 9-win Texas team in a rivalry game? How many times have you seen like the underdog in rivalry games?
Case McCoy beat him.
The underdogs in rivalry games tend to really play well in that game, and the reason I'm talking about that is because I think the same thing happens sometimes in the NFL. Even though they're professionals, even though they're supposed to bring it every Sunday, when a team gets embarrassed, like the Texans were embarrassed there, the players outplay their coaching. You know, the players take their game to another level. And I think that's what happens a lot of times when this team gets any team, but we're talking about the Texans, gets embarrassed. It's more players than coaching that responds. You know what I mean? It's an individual embarrassment, and so they tend to play better. I've always believed that in college sports. I think it happens sometimes in pro sports, and I think that's what happens here. And then the other point I want to make real quick, it's a perfect time to talk about this after we've talked about can Bill O'Brien change in the last segment, because he didn't change from Penn State and you just brought us the audio. He didn't change from Penn State to 7-8 years later here with the Texans. It's the same, could be the same quotes.
Exact same.
Like exact same quotes.
And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a good thing when, I mean, maybe that's what you got to say when it happens. It's just amazing that the losses like that do happen. I don't know if they happen. There's going to be ugly losses, but the Broncos game and then 20 points to Indiana just seems a little bit crazy. But you keep it going. You keep on that roller coaster, and then we hear the team doesn't quit. It's interesting. Maybe that's a thing of the past. But it's always interesting when you go back in the vault, you go back in the lab, and you present that. Let's play the hits. The Texans get some national attention yesterday, but was it good attention? It was centered around J.J. Watt. Daryl Morey has some interesting things to say about the Rockets. And Freestyle Friday, the state of Texas puts their nuts on the chin of Atlanta. The hits next.
Playing all the hits. To the hot stories of the day, presented by United Rentals, the tools and equipment you need for any job. You're in the loop on Houston's Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right, Texans restructure Zach Fulton's contract. He was due to make $7 million this year, not guaranteed. However, he will now be guaranteed $5 million, $3 million next year, but that will not be guaranteed. So he gets $5 million regardless. And Larry Warford, those of you who wanted Larry Warford of the New Orleans Saints, three-time Pro Bowler, to be a Houston Texan. Not going to happen, in the words of John McClain. The Texans will run it back with their offensive line, which really isn't a bad thing. They got an offensive line that they've invested a lot in. You've invested the two firsts and a second in the Laremy Tunsil trade. You used a first-round pick on Titus Howard, a second-round pick on Max Sharping, second-round pick on Nick Martin, and made him one of the highest-paid centers in the league. And then you have Fulton, so you get rid of Fulton. You get rid of his contract, and Fulton's going to be here. You got all five guys, and the Texans are running it back with that offensive line, which means Larry Warford will not be here. No big deal. You save the money. If you'd have run back Fulton for $7 million, it would be suspect, but I think this is actually a good move by Bill O'Brien in the front office. I have no issue with it. I think Warford probably would have been an upgrade, but if you're going to keep Fulton here at that price, a guy who's shown some pretty decent things. I mean, he can play some center. He can play some guard. You did offer him that contract. Zach Fulton makes sense at this price. He didn't make sense at the $7 million price tag, J-Lo.
Look, we all would have been saying if they got Larry Warford, wow, what a deal. They're really upgrading that line now. We would have been happy with it. But I'm happy with this. I feel like the continuity is going to be this could be, if they live up to their potential, this could be the second edition of that line that I told you about before. The core group of the best era of Texans football, and I know it's all relative, so don't start with all the sarcastic tweets, but truly the core era of the best, the core group of the best era in Texans football, you had continuity on the offensive line. You had Dwayne Brown, you had Mike Brazel, you had Chris Myers, you had Wade Smith, and you had Derek Newton. I mean, most of those guys played together 3, 4, 5 years, and it mattered. And it made these guys, just ask Arian Foster. Ask Matt Schaub. Matt Schaub's best 2 years ever were right here behind that offensive line. So I just like the fact that they have the continuity. I don't know if they're going to live up to that. Maybe we can ask Wade Smith that next time we talk to Wade. But I feel like it's certainly a good thing to have those same faces there in front of Deshaun Watson.
It is. It definitely is. We'll hear from J.J. Watt. We'll hear reaction from what J.J. Watt had to say a couple days ago. The Texans roast just continues nationally. I'm ready to play some football so we can at least see this play out on the field, because, my goodness, I feel like people are open for Kevin Hart every time they speak on the Texans. It's a little bit outrageous. But before we do that, could I interest you in putting your nuts on the chin of the people out there in Georgia?
You want me to?
Just kicking their ass.
Really?
Just whooping up on them.
I got nothing against people from Georgia.
I don't have anything against them, too, but Texas just does it better sometimes. It is Friday, so we're going to have Freestyle Friday, the Oklahoma edition. Two different freestyles.
Mm-hmm.
One legendary freestyle
okay.
from a guy from Texas.
Of course.
And one whack freestyle from someone from Georgia who ended up getting kicked off the Oklahoma Sooner team because of it. Do you want to go
because
whack?
Because he couldn't rap?
Well,
you
there's a little more to it than okay. that. I'll give you a little background. Do you want to go whack first, or do you want to save the best for last?
I really want to hear the best.
All right, let's go the best.
I want to hear a good freestyle.
All right, this is Malcolm Kelly, formerly of the Oklahoma Sooners by way of Longview, Texas. Now a receivers coach at TCU, by the way. This is Malcolm Kelly after the Oklahoma Sooners, after they had to kick their quarterback off the team, Rhett Bomar. After Adrian Peterson got hurt, won the Big 12 championship, and beat the Nebraska Cornhuskers, this, in my opinion, is the best locker room freestyle of all time. Here is Malcolm Kelly on Freestyle Friday, rapping after the Oklahoma Sooners, freestyling, I should say, after the Oklahoma Sooners defeated the Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Man. Boys is getting quiet. Going to get crunk. Yeah. Head back to Longview, Kelly popping trunk. Yeah. I ain't even tripping. Yeah. Riding and I'm sipping. Yeah. Let me come through four steady tipping. Yeah. Yeah. Don't let me move back. Yeah. Watch the front crack. Yeah. Yeah. Let me sit sideways, see me running back.
Yeah.
Maybe AP.
Yeah.
Maybe AD.
Yeah.
I ain't even tripping because we some athletes.
Yeah.
Messing with Smitty
yeah.
in the summertime.
Yeah.
He get pissed if we don't make our time.
Yeah.
But we gonna get it
because
we got to finish.
Yeah.
Nebraska Cornhuskers, man, we demean.
Yeah.
Put them balls little,
yeah.
paint like a Skittle.
Yeah.
I ain't even tripping, I ain't never double dribble.
Yeah.
Cause I'm a player
yeah.
from the Himalaya.
Yeah.
Let me sit sideways, man. Maybe back door,
yeah.
maybe fall off.
Yeah.
Sipping codeine cause I gotta kill a cow.
Yeah.
Let me sit sideways in the big bins.
Yeah.
Oh, you boys, they my brothers, they my friends.
Yeah.
Holla at Coach Sumner,
yeah.
holla at the Stoops.
Yeah.
Let me sit sideways in the Tudo Coupe.
Yeah.
Cause I'm sitting clean,
yeah.
foes on the lean.
Yeah.
Look at my pants, got a sag in my jeans.
Yeah.
Let me sit sideways, tell them steady coming.
Yeah.
PT throwing that ball and it's humming.
Yeah.
I'ma go catch it.
Yeah.
I'ma go wretch it.
Yeah.
Man, I'm sitting sideways, boy, show naked
yeah.
today.
Yeah, to Kevin Sumlin shout outs.
Come on.
Had the whole locker room going crazy. No cussing.
No cussing.
No cussing.
Mm-hmm.
You could have played that on national TV. You could play that at preschool. You could play that right after Barney. Just perfect. Just perfect. And Sam Bradford, the other thing in this video, you see Sam Bradford as a freshman back there just
oh, yeah?
kind of enjoying himself. He's enjoying himself. He's got the long hair. That's how they do it in Texas. That's Oklahoma Sooner receiver Malcolm Kelly now with the TCU Horned Frogs.
Oh,
there was also a receiver that went to Oklahoma. He never played. His name was Joshua Jarboe. I actually had him on my radio show when I was in college.
Did you ask him about this?
Yes. It was an example of what not to do and the dangers of social media. This was before social media really blew up. He'd already had gun charges heading into Oklahoma.
Oh, no.
So when you have gun charges, when you got caught with guns at high school, it's probably not good to put out a freestyle in which you might mention those types of things. It's also not good to put out a freestyle on Freestyle Friday when it's whack as hell. This is Texas taking it to Georgia. We heard maybe the goats of freestyles when it comes to Oklahoma, maybe of anything. Here is the wackest freestyle you will ever hear from Josh Jarboe, who was at Oklahoma for about 2 weeks.
Hey, I'm back in the thing once again. Everybody know me. On my chest, you already know me. That's CHAMP. I'm tatted up. Shoot your ass, yeah, like you be Halo. Halo. I got a fine bitch. You look like she J-Lo. Take my shirt off and I be tatted up like I'm Fabo. You shoot you in your head and you might be dead with a halo. So hold on. Don't beg for your life and hold on. Don't ask, please. Hold on. It's me, Jarboe, and my is Steve. Recording the thing on this motherfucker. Camera, and you don't really want it. Light your ass like a camera, like a camera. I around in my tools on the counter, counter. Best believe I'm from Atlanta, I'm from Atlanta. But they tote guns and tote AKs and AKs. And then got dreads and low cut fades and low cut fades. And everybody know I say A and everything I say. Had a gun, now I'm in Oklahoma. I graduated from school, so you know I got my diploma. Didn't get hit, I put his ass in a coma. Got a fine bitch, I know her name is Sonya. Her name is Sonya. Bitch, I keep it real. Dreadhead with red, and I got a grill. Got these hoes United States all the way to Brazil. If she like a barbecue, I put my meat up on a grill. Damn, I keep it real. And I rock black label. I shoot your ass up like a damn pool table.
Like a pool table?
Come on. Come on, man. Come on, Georgia.
Come on, man.
We got some loopholes in Georgia. My goodness, Josh Jarboe.
This dude's Facebook profile, you should have seen it. Like, he had, like, $20,000 in cash just sitting in his lap. He had, like, pit bulls and, like, all
really?
This. Really? Dude, yes. I wonder what Jarbo's
wonder
up
what,
to now.
I wonder what got him kicked out of school.
That freestyle is what was the writing on the wall. And quite honestly, should have got him kicked out of school. Good job,
Biggie. What would Gems and Juice say about that?
It's whack.
It's whack.
Yeah.
My goodness. Good job by Malcolm Kelly. Bad job by Josh Jarbo.
You know, I only
on Freestyle Friday.
I only dabble in rap, and I'm generally early 2000s rap guy are the ones that I like. By the way, I was watching rewatching Who Killed Tupac last night. You've seen that, I'm guessing.
Well, there's about 6,000.
No, the
of
one that was on
broad
Vice.
Statement.
Yeah, the ones on Vice with the attorney.
That, okay, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, you got to watch it. It's on right now. I'm recording tonight. But anyway, so I dabble, and I'm not an expert. But I'm here to tell you.
Oh, no.
I looked it up.
They need to find who killed Tupac.
There's a song back in the day that I really, really like called In My Throwback.
Is it called I Like 16-Year-Olds by Ringo?
No. It's called In My Throwbacks, and it's by a rap group called Dirty South Riders.
Oh, that's DSR.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my throwbacks on my screens.
That if we can find a clean one, I'm
on my screens.
If you can find a clean one, Dirty South Riders and my throwbacks.
On the track, Tom.
The first dude that was rapping.
You think it Tom? You think
sounds just like it?
Tom is high.
Sounds like the dude from Dirty South Riders.
Show me the money, watching Jerry Maguire on my screen. No, that's on my screens. Throwbacks, yeah, DSR. Yeah, DSR we listen to. Wade Smith knows about DSR. I know about DSR.
The only song I know because I liked it.
I used to have to go to a place called Eargasm and get DSR albums along with, like, Swisha House.
So
tapes.
I'm gonna tell you, and again, I always preface throwbacks. It by saying I'm an amateur.
Yeah.
But I think
you just mentioned DSR. That's deep.
That's pretty deep?
That's deep. Deep, well, deep, deep.
Good.
Deep,
I impressed
deep,
you.
Deep.
But that's the only song I know there.
That's really deep. Yeah, that's all you should know.
So I liked that song back in the day.
Yeah.
And I think, would you agree with me that the first rapper that you heard, that we played, sounds like the guy from DSR? I don't know the guy's name.
I think it's Tom Tom.
Yeah.
It's Tom Tom. There was Fat Bastard. There was Lil Ronnie.
Yeah.
There was Double T. Addiction. God, Addiction sucked.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
I can't believe you just dropped DSR. I'm impressed with you. That's no. Figgy doesn't know anything about that. Like 90% of our audience doesn't know about DSR.
Really?
That's crazy. Yes.
I just like the song, man. That's why I always look crazy. Him up.
That's absolutely insane. J.J. Watt, probably not familiar with DSR, but he is familiar with Bill O'Brien. We talked about this yesterday, as did Payne and Pendergast. His answer to the question about Bill O'Brien and whether or not he's a good coach. Here was JJ's answer from Bill O'Brien, and not only did we react to it, but the national media types did as well.
What makes Bill O'Brien a good head coach? What makes him good at leading this team?
I think his job is to do just that, is to lead the team, is to, obviously he's more of an offensive guy than a defensive guy, so it's to lead the overall team, but then to lead the offense, and now with his other roles as well, is to general manage, is to do everything within the organization. That's his role, and I think that's what obviously he excels at.
Golly, the more you hear that, the worse it sounds, especially when you just balance it with what he said about when we was talking about Anthony Weaver.
Sometimes you got to wonder when you talk about Bill O'Brien if you're just too close to the situation, and by you, I mean us.
Yeah.
But when you hear national media types have the same reaction, guys who don't cover the Texans on the reg, and let's be honest, the Texans are they've been front and center in the news the last few months because of the moves Bill O'Brien has made. But it's not like the Cowboys or, you know, the Giants or something like that where they're just looking for content to move the needle. That's not what they do. So when they do stuff like this, that means it really got a genuine reaction.
Were legitimately like, hey, we got to talk about this.
It's not like let's say Dak Prescott versus Carson Wentz as the fifth best quarterback in the league, and let's just discuss
it. Rate your all-time starting five. I had enough of that, by the way.
Yeah, it's whack.
Golly,
it's like Mount Rushmore
everywhere.
Type stuff. But on Highly Questionable with Dan Le Batard and Stu Gotts, they along with Mina Kimes, reacted to J.J. Watt's answer that we just heard.
Okay, so were they as enlightened as we were with it?
You tell me.
All right, so Captain America, when he is acting and speaking in front of cameras, he says the right things that he thinks that fans want to hear, and people do believe him to be sincere. But he was stumped when asked the easiest question in the world, which is, just tell us how good your coach is. So the answer is, why is he such a good coach? The answer is because he's a coach. And that's it. That's all he said to you there, with some pacifying gestures, sort of rubbing his hands through his hair, uncomfortable. he just told you that Bill O'Brien's not a good coach. That's what he just said.
Basically sounded like he was, you know, assigned an essay on Bill O'Brien and began with, the dictionary defines coach, and then smash that double space button and increase the margins as much as he could.
Man. So we were not negatively biased because we're too close.
I mean, it was obvious.
Yeah.
Just incredibly obvious right there. Just don't. Pretty amusing, to say the very least. I'm just ready for the season. 104 days, by the way, for Texans versus Kansas City Chiefs out there in Arrowhead. Let's just play some ball. Let's see how this plays out. I'm ready for it. I mean, I can promise you I'm ready for it. Once training camp starts, I mean, you're pretty much just going to have to evaluate the roster, and I cannot wait. Part of that roster,
quick,
though.
You got to get ready quick.
There will not be DeAndre Hopkins on the Texans. He was on ESPN yesterday as well, Jalen and Jacoby, and he was asked if he's the best receiver in football.
I definitely think I'm the best. I know I'm the best. You know, Mike, my boy, I love Mike. We was chasing yesterday, but he know if I had Drew Brees my whole career, what these numbers would be. Julio Jones know if I had Matt Ryan my whole career. That's my boy. I trained with Julio, too. He know what these numbers would be. So, you know, those guys are definitely blessed to be in a position where their whole career they had a Pro Bowl quarterback that they spent, you know, multiple seasons with. You know, but I don't complain. I don't make excuses. I go out and work.
Well, that's good to hear. Good to see you answer
he's,
that question.
He's pretty straightforward.
That's cool.
Pretty candid with
That's
his
cool.
answer. Somebody
Thanks.
Somebody asked him, you know, if he thought he was the best receiver in football.
Yeah.
Has he been asked that before?
He has.
Really?
Yeah. Didn't give the same answer, though.
Do you have the audio?
Do you feel like you're the best receiver in the game right now?
Why everybody want to ask me that question?
Curiosity.
Do you want to write a story?
No,
you
know, no.
He's
I
the best receiver?
I just want to see. I just want to see if you think
that question like 100 times. Like, if y'all don't know who I am by now, then don't ask me that question.
Fair enough.
Do you feel like I'm the best?
Yes.
All right, well, put that down. In your score.
Oh, hang, Landry.
Get Landry the out of here.
Not even top 10. Not even top 10 to me anymore.
Dang, Landry.
Yeah,
you're talking about, do you feel like there's some negative vibes happening in Houston with DeAndre Hopkins now that he's in Arizona? Yeah, you. You're the guy. You're the percentage point.
Not a fan anymore. Not a fan. Hope you fall off out there with Cliff Kingsbury. Just kidding. I love you, Nuke. Always will. Stadiums might not be empty after all. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has issued a revised order. Not only will pro sports leagues be allowed to resume in June, but outdoor stadiums will be allowed to host fans up to, wait for it, John, 25% capacity. 25%.
So, obviously, a lot of details to work out. But there is a very, very important question hanging over NRG Stadium. Does it work? Does the roof work? There, you've heard, separate from me, from a different source than me, I've heard that part of the reason that the roof does not, that they don't open the roof at NRG Stadium, and it could be completely false, so we're just being honest here, is that it's either has difficulty to open or they can't open it like they used to as either as swiftly or at all. So we're going to find out. We're going to find out if that's true or not. There's going to be a lot of WD-40 up there. They're going to try to get that thing going. Can they? What if they can't? What if they cannot open the roof at NRG?
They're going to find a way to. Like, if they can't, they
will.
They're
going to spend a lot of money. Get some crews up there.
I'm starting to believe they can't. Because why wouldn't they?
You know, back in the day, Gary Kubiak just did not. He wanted perfect conditions for his offense. Maybe Bill O'Brien is the same, you know, or has those tendencies. So he didn't like to open the roof, but he did. The roof was open occasionally under Kubiak, It hadn't been open, man, since when? I know I've seen it like it was 13, 14,
a while,
something like that.
A while.
Maybe 15.
It needs to be open, man.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it's going to have to be open now.
Well, I mean, it's a blessing when the roof is closed at the juice box where the Strohs play,
mm-hmm.
because it's hot as hell.
Yeah.
Like, it's hot as hell. Like, especially in July and August, it's a blessing. But in the fall, we're blessed with our fall weather. Like, we're 100% blessed. Even our winter weather. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a blessing sometimes.
Why you live in Houston, man?
Sometimes you don't even need a jacket. Open that damn thing up.
It's Houston, baseball's going to be interesting. There's not as much. They open the roof a lot more, obviously, with the Astros, but the weather is always cool. It's always nice. In the dead of summer, when you're in July and August, man, it's going to be a little sticky in there. Be a little sticky in old Minute Maid Park.
David Price.
Mm-hmm.
Nice gesture by David Price. He is going to pay out of his own pocket, $1,000 during the month of June to each minor league player in the Dodgers system.
Man, that's so awesome.
$1,000 to everybody, 40-man roster not included. So if you're in the bigs, no, but he's going to give $1,000, basically another stimulus check.
Yeah, pretty much. How cool is that? That guy's never going to have to worry about throwing inside on somebody because everybody's going to have his back. All those players are going to have his back. One other point, and the reason he's doing that is because hundreds of minor league players have been fired, you know, have been released. And when you couple that with the fact that Major League Baseball is kind of imploding right now in terms of its labor piece, what are they doing to themselves for the long term? You know, they could be losing fans, you know, based on the perception of greed on whatever side you think it is. And now the minor league systems are going to be affected. What is baseball doing? I mean, this is long-term effect here, man.
It's damn shame. Damn shame. Big impacts on baseball. We'll get into that more in the noon hour. As far as basketball goes, big meeting today between the owners and the commissioner. We could see basketball very, very soon at a venue in Florida, mm-hmm. A neutral site. Daryl Morey thinks with all the stuff that's gone on, it's an advantage for the Houston Rockets.
How so?
I have no idea. Here he is talking about it yesterday during a Zoom call.
We do feel like our odds have gone up. Our odds have gone up with the trade, and also our odds have gone up with the restart. And because we probably can't call ourselves a favorite, we just haven't played well enough to say that. Anything that adds uncertainty to the system is generally good for us.
What?
Why?
Bro, what are you talking about, man?
I don't know what this is based on.
Why is, if there's uncertainty, does it make the Rockets a favorite?
Don't get it. Really don't get it.
Why not? Why doesn't it make the Clippers a favorite?
No clue.
You know?
Like, zero clue. We'll go around the NFL at one. There's also a billion-dollar deal that the owners have signed that it's a big deal. Mike gets one of the most influential organizations, companies in the NFL to finally get off their ass and try to improve their product. We'll see. But before we do that, and before mm-hmm. we have lunch with you in the noon hour, I just want to pour one out for Cleverly Stone. Who passed away yesterday. She was the founder of Houston Restaurant Week. She had a radio show here. She also did some TV on Fox. Larger-than-life figure.
Figgy, she really was.
Figgy, I know you produced her show. I mean, she was a diva. I mean, she was a damn diva. She'll
and
tell you
told
that.
You
she had
she
the
was
nickname.
A diva.
Yeah.
I mean, if her intro wasn't
not
ready,
a secret.
She wasn't going on the air. She knew that. But, I mean, she was very impactful. She did some great work. She was a master of her craft. And she was a girl that when she came in the room, she owned that. She owned that SOB.
She really did.
She owned it regardless of what was going on. And she is an icon. She did a lot of good things.
She, and Houston Restaurant Week alone is just enormous that she established and developed that. She was just always a gem to me. But Figgy, you worked with her on a daily basis. Give me the first Cleverly story that pops into your mind.
The first one that pops in my mind is I was over working for 610 and somebody else was filling in for her show.
Mm-hmm.
And she was producing the show and the intro wasn't ready. And for some reason, the intro wasn't in the system and she refused to go in there. She said, nope, it got to be perfect. Like, I'm not going on the show like this. Don't mess with Kevin, I kind of respect that.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
People want to hear the intro of the show.
She ain't doing it. She ain't messing around. Pour one out for Cloudy.
So she didn't go on until about 15 minutes later.
Yeah.
But true the intro was there.
She never steered anyone wrong when they asked about a good restaurant they should go to.
Nope. She gave me some gift cards that I maximized. Yeah. And I act like I paid out of my own pocket. I damn sure did. Appreciate her. Pour one out for Cleverly Stone Up. True H-Town legend. Is the roof finally going to be open at NRG? And what if the rumor is true that we've started to discuss? Lunchtime on In the Loop on a Football Friday next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.